Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happy, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today. We've got a wonderful show. Hey, you know what? I'm going to talk a little bit of how to update your emergency fund with inflation. But right now, we've got a wonderful topic, and it's top of mind because it's in the Supreme Court. You know what? Where President Biden is hoping to get his proposal to have a portion of the student loan debt forgiven, and they're fighting it out in the Supreme Court. Now, you know what? One of the things that I think people need to realize is you're still going to have student loan debt. And it's important to understand what's happening right now, what happened in the past, what's going to happen in the future. And that's why we have Brian Cardona. He's a certified financial planner. Discuss the past, the present, the future, what's going on, unpack these entitlement programs and more. So you really want to be here for that. In fact, it's right now. So just to give you a little background on Brian, besides having a master's in financial services from the American College and a bachelor's in finance from the College of New Jersey, he's got a number of degrees in economics. He's a certified financial planner. He's a retirement income certified professional. He's a life underwriter and so on. But more importantly, you've probably seen him on Forbes, CNBC, In Success, Entrepreneur, Business Insiders, Newsmax, and more. He has his own podcast, but you know what? He's got this wonderful book. I think it's a great title. It's called What Should I Do With My Money? It just got out last month. Sales are going great. Reviews are wonderful. Brian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Actually, I'm really happy you're here, but more so because of our topic. So what I'd like you to do is just let's start by breaking down what's currently happening with the student loans and, you know, what's the prediction for the future here?
Sure thing. So just to kind of, you know, paint the landscape right now, bring everybody up to speed. Right now, there are over $1.7 trillion in student loans outstanding, which is just to start. I mean, it's just this exorbitant number that a lot of people, once you get into a number with that many zeros, whether it goes up to 1.8 or to 2 trillion and beyond, the average Joe out there can't really tell the difference. We just kind of get lost in the mix. Of that 1.7, 92% of all student loans are held by our federal government. All right. So this has been something that over the past several years, the Fed has been the number one provider of financing education. So when you break that down to more of a micro level, the average student loan balance per borrower is about $38,000. Okay. Now that's an average. So keep in mind, you know, some folks out there might just have 20 grand remaining. I deal a lot with physicians, for instance, that often graduate with $300,000, $400,000 of student loans after you take in, you know, undergrad, med school, and so forth. So it can be a broad spectrum, but a lot of debt that young professionals are carrying right now. So that's kind of the landscape. And of course, what's dominating the news is President Biden last year pushed forward his loan forgiveness program. All right, this is a $400 billion bill, which would be forgiving either $10,000 of student loans or $20,000 of student loans, depending on the borrower's income and the type of loan that they carry. And as you mentioned in the intro, that's being held up in court right now, which we can get into if you'd like. But like so many things, you know, in amid emergency, we try and come up with a bill or a measure to help the people. And then not long thereafter, it becomes politicized. And I think that's kind of where we stand today.
Yeah, it's nuts. But okay, you know what? Students get out. Just for example, my son has finished his master's program in June of last year. And you know what? He, you know, filled all the forms out and everything. And, you know, he's going to have to start making some payments on those loans. Why does it make sense to refinance your student loan? Or, you know what? What do people need to know if they're looking to refinance their student loan? Especially right now, we're seeing higher interest rates, the whole shot. I don't know how it affects student loans.
Yep. And that's a great question, Steve. So when you're looking at possibly refinancing student loans, there's a number of things that you have to take into account. Okay. The people who would refinance to a private lender, the first thing they have to realize is they are taking 100% responsibility for those loans. Whereas when they're with the Fed, when you have Fed loans, you can be eligible for these forgiveness programs, like the one that President Biden's pushing for, things like public service loan forgiveness, which has been around for some time now. And then, of course, COVID relief, which we didn't even really get into quite yet. But, you know, this has been 3 years now where these Fed loans have essentially been frozen. Now, if you refinance with a private lender at your bank, let's say, or SoFi or any of the other ones out there, you are moving away from the Fed and you're taking 100% responsibility, which means a lot of that relief and a lot of those forgiveness programs are no longer available to you. And I think that's the number one thing to realize. So you say, well, why would you do it then? The impetus, at least years ago, was, well, I'm at 7% on my Fed loans. What if I can go to 3 or 4% with a private lender? All right. And if you knew you were going to pay your loans, you didn't have some exorbitant balance, that might make sense for some folks. Now, if you want to go for forgiveness, of course, you probably wouldn't do that. And right now, with all the COVID relief that's still going on, you're not seeing a lot of refinances occurring. And as interest rates obviously have spiked over the past year, it's just taking away more of the reasons to refinance, because you might be moving laterally from 7% with the Fed, you know, arbitrarily over to maybe a similar number with a private lender. So there's not as big an advantage as there may have been 2-3 years ago.
I see. I mean, it's gone the way of used cars. People aren't buying because they don't want to pay 10%. So why laterally refinance? I totally get it. Now, you talked about COVID relief plan programs. I didn't know about those. Could you share those with our audience? Because I think it's very important, because many people on this call, they have kids in the same positions that my kids are in. They're just getting out of college and all that stuff.
Certainly. So once, you know, unfortunately, COVID came ashore here in the States, and when we were in March of 2020 and the pandemic really hit us hard, the federal government went out and said, okay, we're going to offer a lot of relief, stimulus packages, so on and so forth. And one of those things was for student loan borrowers. And they said, we are now no longer collecting or mandating student loan repayments. Okay, so effectively you went into, if you were on an income-based repayment that was costing you $500 a month, it immediately went to a $0 repayment. And in addition to that, they were not accruing interest on those Fed loans. So if your balance was $100,000, it has sat there at $100,000 since March of 2020. And now here we are in March of 23, 3 years now have transpired since, you know, the pandemic first hit us. And so there has been zero interest accruing on those Fed loans. And that's another thing to note is, you know, the whole point of Biden's loan forgiveness program is to give relief amid a national emergency. And now here we are 3 years past COVID. We've had no accruing interest or mandated payments for 3 years, which estimates show has cost the federal government about $150 billion already in lost revenues. So it's kind of, and that's the argument, is this is becoming more than just a quote unquote modification to student loan repayments. And that's still going on. It's set to expire in the summer of this year, but, you know, we'll see. That's certainly become a bargaining chip on the student loan forgiveness.
And then the public service loan forgiveness, how does that work?
Yep. So that's something that's been around since 2007. And so what it says is if you have Fed Direct loans and you go on to work for a federally qualified facility, what that would be is typically a nonprofit working in the public sector, like for the VA or for, you know, the state or something like that. Then you could be at this qualified institution. And while you're there, if you're making income-based repayments on the Fed Direct loans, after 120 payments or 10 years, the balance of that loan could be forgiven. And so that's something that started in 07. So you started to see your first applications in 2017. And now that's starting to kind of pick up steam. And each year you're seeing more of the PSLF program be used.
That's wonderful. Hey, you know what? This is some great information so far. You definitely want to stick with us for the second half of the show. We're going to be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show where we're talking about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happy, healthy relationship with money. I want to truly thank you for tuning into the show. Appreciate you sharing us with your friends and families. Hey, all the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, our Google Play channel, and check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio in New York City, and E360 TV. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Again, if you'd like to follow us on Facebook at Saving with Steve Sexton, you can check out the Insiders Club, check out all the behind-the-scenes stuff, guest gifts, the whole shot. We're here to talk with Brian Coderna, all about the past, present, and future of the student loan business. But you know what? He's got the greatest book called What Should I Do About My Money? Brian, thanks you for being again, for being part of our show here today. I have a whole bunch of questions for you. I hope we have enough time to talk about a few of them. One of the things that a lot of people don't do, especially in the financial planning area, is they keep their college loan separate. You know, why is it so important for people to fold their college loan into their overall financial plan? And, you know, how do they get started with how do they understand how to do that? You know, how should they get started doing something like that?
Yeah, I think it's critical. I mean, ideally, if you can go into college, let's say with your son or daughter, and have a game plan of what's college going to cost, how are we paying for college? And then know, okay, when you graduate in 4 years from today, this is the balance you'll carry. If you have that type of foresight, of course, that's going to put you in a much better spot. But if we're on the back end, we're like, hey, we're here now. I got a lot of student loan debt. I didn't think it was going to be this bad for, you know, better or worse, whatever that situation is. Immediately, we need to factor that into the budget and the financial plan. Okay. To not do that would be akin to saying, I bought a house. I got a big mortgage now. Who cares? I'm not even going to really factor that into anything I'm doing. Nobody would ever do that. So you have to take kind of a similar approach with the student loan debt and, you know, figure out where does it fall on the priority list? Are there other things we're trying to do? Do we have credit card debt we're working through? Are we trying to build our emergency funds? You know, is our student loans at 3% from way back, or are they at 8%? So there's a lot of different variables there, but you need to come up with a plan. And then once you have one, you can move forward with confidence and not have to feel like you have this enormous burden on your shoulders that is just inescapable.
It's really interesting you say that. You know, it's like a lot of people don't realize financing college is like financing a house because it's not cheap anymore.
Correct.
My kids were together, even with scholarships and everything, are still over a couple hundred thousand dollars. So, it's really important that people realize that you want to plan for this. It's unbelievably important. Now, the other question I see, and you see this all the time, where people, they went and got the college degree, but they're doing nothing related to that college. They like working with their hands or all that. So when we talk about, you know, should college be the goal for everybody? You know what? I'd love to hear your take on that, Brian.
Sure. Another great question. And the simple answer is no. And that's not to say anything against college. I mean, I went to college. I have a bachelor's degree. I have a master's degree. But I think you really need to understand what is the value you're getting out of that piece of paper, out of that diploma. And if you can't identify exactly what that is, and even from a monetary standpoint, what's the return, the rate, the return on that investment, then you really need to give it a second thought. So I think college, of course, is suitable for people pursuing STEM subjects. You're going into engineering, you know, you're going to be a statistician, you want to be a physician someday, you're going to be an attorney. Those things, we know you need schooling. You can't just show up and get on the job training. You certainly need some base knowledge to do any of that. But there's a lot of things out there where you can get on the job training. And if you want to go into the trades, if you're going to do something blue collar, if you want to go into sales, if there's so many different things out there that don't necessarily require that four-year degree and maybe that $150,000 debt that you'll take on. So the short answer is no, it's not for everyone. It can be great for some, but you need to know why you're going there and what your expectation is. And I think all too often nowadays, you see it as I'm graduating high school, I have to go to college. That's what everybody's telling me. And then we follow that knee-jerk reaction, not really knowing why we're showing up there. We go through those 4 years hoping to pass. And then that's, like you alluded to, a lot of people graduate and say, well, what do I do now? And mm-hmm. that's kind of a scary thing to do now when you're encumbered in debt.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking when you were saying that to really figure it out monetarily. And we did that for my son because he has a degree in engineering. And when he was looking at his master's, we actually did the math for the discipline that he's in. And said, you know, how much more could you get if you got the master's, and how much would it actually cost you? We didn't factor in the fact that he actually got more scholarships than his master's. He had a great grade point average, but we figured out he'd actually make 40% more starting, and he actually ended up making about 40% more starting than his other guys, other friends. So we actually did the math. So I think it's important that people see the math. And the other part is understanding what is a viable degree for you is key, because there's a lot of people with degrees and masters and stuff like that. They're still working, and there's nothing wrong with Starbucks. They're still doing the Starbucks thing because they're trying to find their way with that degree and they got tons of debt. So yeah, I totally agree with you there. Yeah. Now, let's talk about the sustainability of the U.S. entitlement programs such as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. I think this is a topic that everybody's concerned about, whether they're going to be around here for the future, what's going on with it. And I'd really love to hear your take. And I know my viewers would as well.
Sure. Yeah. So this, it's a big question, and it's certainly a big concern. And it's funny in my book. So I just want to kind of show this up here again. It's anywhere you see it. It's this bright golden book called What Should I Do With My Money? And the second chapter is on entitlements. And the chapters, so there's these nine domains of economics that we go through in the book, and they're in chronological order for a reason. And I think entitlements come so early in the book because it is kind of the bedrock of our economy today. So you mentioned Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. You know, right there, you're seeing the two biggest expenses for our government. Number one is Medicare, Medicaid. Number two is Social Security right behind it. These systems are enormous, and they're what retirees are banking on to be able to retire and live comfortably. So as far as kind of the state of both of the programs, just to give some context, Social Security came about, you know, right around World War II era. In 1945, there were 42 taxpaying workers per beneficiary. Okay, so a lot of people paying their taxes to support the recipients. And the normal retirement age at that time was 65. All right. In 1945, people did not live that long. So there were a lot of people putting in the system, and then the system didn't have to pay out benefits for all that long a period. Now we fast forward to today in 2023, there are roughly two tax-paying workers per beneficiary. So if we simply look at the math, there's much less going into the system and much more taken out. And now the normal retirement age has been moved up to 67, depending on your date of birth. But if you look at that, you know, okay, we bumped it back 2 years, but folks are living a lot longer today than they were back in 1945. So there's a lot of pressure on the system just from a pure math standpoint. And I think that's why it goes without saying Social Security probably needs to have some updates to remain viable. Now, Medicare, Medicaid, these things came about, you know, during Lyndon Johnson's presidency. Medicare was created in 1965 and now is, you know, something that we're all counting on when we turn 65 to provide for our health care. And then if you look at Medicaid, which we think is just kind of almost a form of welfare, it's for lower income individuals. Medicaid is the number one payer for long-term care today. All right. So you just think of these systems and the expenses inherent to them. And I mentioned the second chapter's, you know, entitlements. The first chapter is population. And why population comes first is if you just look at the changing demographic, that's what kind of spells, you know, how can all of these systems continue to thrive or survive depending on the changing demographic. And the last little point I'd make to that, not to get too into the weeds here, we look back at, like, say, the 1960s, all right, about 5% of the world was over 65, all right? And that number is about 9% in America. Now in 2023, those numbers are about double, okay? And they're expected to go up exponentially, you know, as longevity continues. And so it's become a whole nother phase of life, this kind of retirement phase that's no longer just a year or two. For many folks, it could be as long as their career, but we have to find ways for that to be affordable.
Yeah, I agree with that. Hey, Brian, I want to thank you for joining today. I always know it's a good interview when it goes like that. Could you share your book with us one more time and let people know where they can go and get it?
Yep, sure thing. So it's called What Should I Do With My Money? Economic Insights to Build Wealth Amid Chaos. It's available wherever all books are sold. There's the paperback, which I'm holding up here. You can get at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, anywhere. There's an ebook you can get on your Kindle or any device. And there's also an audiobook. So if you like to listen on Audible or any of those, you're also able to listen to the audiobook.
Hey, Brian, I want to thank you for joining us today. If somebody needs to reach out to you, is there a website they can go to?
Yeah, sure thing. So you can follow me in all the things I post and great content we share. It's at www.briancaderna.com. That's Brian with a Y and then my last name, Caderna.com. So you can go there. You can email us at info@briancaderna.com. Try and get back to everyone in due time. And also feel free to check out my podcast, which we've had for a few years now, the Caderna Podcast. Have a lot of great content and guests on there as well.
Thank you for joining us. Be safe, be healthy. And you know what? Maybe we should have you back again.
I'd be happy to. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Now, today, my little talk is how to update your emergency fund for inflation. And emergency funds, you know, they can help you stay on good financial footing, especially when you're facing unexpected costs like medical bills, car payments. You know what? If you want to invest these funds so you can earn money, you also want to ensure that make sure you have easy access to them. So liquid assets like money markets, high yield savings account, CDs are some of the ways you could invest in your emergency money. You just really want to shop around to make sure that you have the ability to earn a little bit. So like right now, you're seeing money markets in the 4% range. If you still got one in the 1% range, 4% range would be better. You know what? The benefits of liquidity when you're looking at an emergency fund is the fact that you can quickly convert it into cash if there's a problem, okay? Things like real estate, stocks, things that take a long time to get to your money, it doesn't work out too well, or you're going to have a significant penalty if you're utilizing that for an emergency fund. Now, one of the things that you want to think about here is some people say, hey, Steve, what if I invest my money in the stock market? Well, let's think about that. If you're investing your money, your emergency money in the stock market, and the stock market goes down and you have that emergency, you have a less to come take from. One of the big things you want to look at with an emergency fund is you want to have at least 6 months worth of expenses. I'm talking expenses, getting by, making sure those things work. So if your expenses are $2,000 a month, you want to get it to the point where you have $12,000 a month. If you have that $12,000 a month, you're not going to have to jump into to credit cards. It makes it so much easier for that. And one of the easiest ways to start is set up a separate savings account. We have one, and we just call it our e-account. And all we do on a monthly basis is we fund so much money in there. If you start with $100 or $200 or $300 or whatever it is, just start, fund it, forget about it. Put it from your paycheck, whatever it is. Just keep it going in there. Keep it going in there. Look at it once every 3 or 4 months to see what the value is. And then you want to keep looking for the best way for you to maximize the return on that and to make sure it's liquid. Now, I want to thank you all for joining us today here on Saving with Steve. Briar Cardurna was awesome. He went to the past, the present, the future of student loans, went into entitlement programs. He's got a wonderful book, What Should I Do With My Money? You want to check that out? You can get it on Amazon. By the way, you'll have the link on our website as well for that. That's it with me. This is Steve Saxton with Saving with Steve. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Saxton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Saxton on UK Health Radio.